Thank you, Rich. My name is Marianne Wells. I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Marianne.
I just have to make one comment. Up to this point, I thought all Al-Anon did was wash coffee cups, bake birthday cakes, and drive men in AA to drink.
That
was great. I enjoyed it. Thank you. I'm very grateful to the committee for inviting me to be here tonight. It's always great to be in Helena. I like to come here and visit my money that the state of Montana demands I send voluntarily. On a real regular basis, it's nice to come and see what they're doing with it, you know. I would like to stand in front of you tonight and tell you that I'm here and I'm sober and I'm somewhat sane because one day I had a burning desire to turn my life around and quit drinking. But they tell me this is a program of rigorous honesty, and that's not the truth, so I can't tell you that. I'm here tonight because one morning I woke up in jail in Casper, Wyoming. And that wasn't a very unusual thing for me. I woke up in jail in a lot of towns in a lot of mornings. But what happened after that was something that had never happened to me before. I went to court the next morning, and the judge was there, and he said, how many times have you been in our courtroom? And I said, well, I haven't kept track of it. And he said, well, first he wanted to know how long I'd lived there. And I said, oh, you know, I really didn't know because I lived in a state of 24-hour-a-day drinking, so who keeps track of days when you're doing that? But I generally only stay in one spot 3 or 4 months at a time because, you know, you get too well known if you stay very long. So I moved on very regularly. And so I told him, oh, probably 4 months. And he said, well, do you know how many times you've been in my court? And I said, no. I haven't kept track of it. He said, you've been here 20 times in that 4 months. And every one of them's an alcohol-related offense. Well, of course, I, you know, said I thought you cops had nothing to do except watch me, you know. Must have a real quiet city here because they're always on my doorstep. Then he went on to ask me if I felt I had a problem with alcohol. Well, I had known for 15 years what my problem was. But you don't tell a judge that, for heaven's sake. God knows what they're going to do to you, you know. They might lock you up and throw away the key, and you never see the light of day again. So I told him no, of course. Well, he overruled my objections and proceeded to tell me what he was going to do with me. He said, you have two choices. He said, you're going to go for a long term in some place that you're not going to get out of too easily. Or he said, I think I'm going to try something else first. He said, you are going to go down to our local mental health clinic on a regular basis. Because they didn't have any direct alcohol counseling in that town at that time, but so you went through the mental health clinic. And he said, you're going to go to the hospital once a day, and you're going to take an anabuse pill. Well, now, if any of you are familiar with this drug or aren't familiar with it, it settles in your liver, and if you drink while you're taking it, you'll get violently ill and possibly even die. So it's one way of keeping you from drinking, I guarantee that. He said, then the last thing, the one that struck terror in my heart, was that I had to go to an AA meeting once a week. Well, you know, I knew nothing about AA, but I knew I didn't want any part of it, was all I know. So I did begin going to see this counselor, and I did start taking antabuse, which meant I was not drinking, okay? Well, the first Wednesday, I was supposed to be at 10 o'clock at Wednesday, I was supposed to be at a certain place for this AA meeting, and I didn't even bother going to see where it was. And I decided I didn't want to go, so I didn't. And the next thing I know, there's a knock on my door, and here's a 6-foot cop. How come all cops are always at least 6 feet tall, yeah? And generally come in pairs, you know. But anyhow, he said, you're supposed to be at the AA meeting. And I said, well, I decided I don't need to go to that. I'm not drinking, you know. He said, well, it is part of your sentence. So the pistol came out and the handcuffs went on, and I went to the AA meeting. In fact, I sat through that first meeting handcuffed to a radiator. I heard a speaker once say that, fortunately, we're not graded here on our motivation because mine wasn't the best, believe me. But that's how I got here. That was my first exposure to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I stayed for my 3 months that I had to. I took the antabuse so I could not drink. I went to these meetings, and at the end of 3 months, I don't remember them ever saying, you have to change yourself, you have to work steps. They probably said it, but I was pretty... I was very befogged, let's face it. You know, I really didn't understand what was going on. The only thing I learned was the Serenity Prayer, and that made no sense to me whatsoever. I thought that was dumber than heck, you know. So as soon as I was out of trouble, I went back to drinking, which was a normal thing for me to do. Well, about 4 months later, you know, things were not getting better as they seem to, and whenever you're a practicing alcoholic, they gradually get worse and worse and worse. And even though I had learned that it's up to me to make a difference in me and there's things I have to do to fix me, I did have that 3 months that I had at least felt physically better. You know, I didn't have to wake up in the morning and crawl around and look for that bottle I hid the night before that I'm going to die if I don't have a drink out of. Or I didn't have to go looking for the nearest solution to my problem. And so I began to feel maybe, possibly, you know, I should go back to AA and give it a fair try and see possibly if it could work for me, because I was getting worse. A doctor had told me I was going to die within 2 years if I continued to drink, which only struck great fear in my heart because it was taking so long. You know, this was a little traumatic to me. I thought, well, if the next drink will do it, I'll do it now, you know. But I couldn't see another 2 years of that kind of existence. Also, when I had spent that 3 months in AA, I saw something I'd never seen before. I'd seen some happy people that didn't drink, and I didn't understand it. And I checked them out carefully. You know, I sniffed and I looked, made sure, and their pupils looked okay. They weren't on strange stuff, you know, but they acted relatively sane. And so this kind of appealed to me that maybe I could, you know, be a little like some of these people. So by this time I had moved back to Billings, and I found myself in an AA meeting in Billings one day. And I thought this time I had gone back because this was what I wanted to do. I wanted to quit drinking. I wanted to change my life. Well, I suppose to a degree, but I did everything I did very reluctantly. You know, I would sit there and they would talk about working steps, and I'd look around and, you know, I'd been this intellectual genius that had lived by my wits. And I could con and manipulate all kinds of people down there on Skid Row where I like to hang out. So I thought, you know, well, that's good enough for you dummies because you need this, but I don't have to do this. You know, I don't have to work these steps, and sure, my life's unmanageable. Or I didn't see my life as unmanageable, but I was powerless over alcohol. That was fine. And this went on for a long time. And they had kept telling me, you know, I'd sit there and I'd say, it's not working for me like it is for you. And they suggest maybe I wasn't working, you know. They always got all these crazy answers, and they say, well, go to the meetings and read the big books and don't drink. Well, I couldn't read the big book. I couldn't read anything. You know, I wasn't capable of that. They told me to get a sponsor. Well, I didn't know what a sponsor was, and I wasn't going to call anybody up. You know, I had a little bit of ego there, and I, you know, really didn't need any help from anybody. I was doing fine. Of course, I was back on antabuse by then, too, you know. So I couldn't drink, so I was okay. Well, 5 months later, I discovered, after I went off my antabuse, that I drank again. And this was kind of a turning point in my life, because at this time I realized I really didn't want to go back to what I'd been before. I'd had enough of being around AA to determine that, hey, sobriety was probably better than the old drunken me. And I knew I had to do more. So the next morning I got up and thought, well, what had they told me to do? And I really didn't know, because I hadn't paid any attention, you know. I was trying to soak it up by osmosis, you know. If I sit here, it'll just creep in. I don't have to do anything. And the next morning I got up, and all I did was say, keep me sober today. That was all I did. I mean, that's a pretty short prayer, if you ask me, you know. And it was several months later before I realized that was working. But it took a while. People tell me I have to qualify to prove that I belong here, and that's not too difficult, really. I started a story one time by saying I was born, I was a baby, you know, but that's what we all were, let's face it. you know, I've heard some drunk logs, but that's about the way they go, but I'm not going to get into that extent. My mother's father came from a family of drunks. And it so sickened him and turned him off that he left home and went to school and became a hell and brimstone minister. I don't know but what the drinking was better, but, so there was an alcoholic background there. He raised his 10 children in this way, including my mother, who carried on the same tradition, and she does it well yet today. You know, it's not only The alcohol had been stopped. I mean, they were not actually alcoholics, but they still have the negative background. They still have the negative attitudes and the negative thinking. And on top of that is added all the fear of this giant in the sky that's going to get them. And it's a tough life, you know, and that's the way I was raised. But well, my mother, coming from this family, showed up at home one day with me and no husband in sight. And that's probably the worst thing she could have done. And her family determined that she wasn't worth a darn, and they just sort of turned their back on me because, you know, I didn't deserve as much as everybody else. I wasn't really part of the family. I always felt I was different. They tolerated me. They didn't abuse me, but I didn't have the same rights as all the other cousins did. I was different. When I was a few months old, my mother married a man who was not my father, but the only dad I ever knew and I adored, and he thought I was pretty great, too. But to his family, I was only that girl that George was raising. So I was an outsider there, too. And I always felt I was different, and I think some of it stems from that. Part of it was just me. Part of it was, yes, I am worthless. And I always felt that from the time I was little. Well, my only aim in life when I was a child was to get out of this kind of atmosphere and to get away from all this stuff and all this God business and going to church 19 times a week and being scared to death of everything all the time. So 2 days after I graduated from high school, I left home. I, for some reason, knew I needed that piece of paper in my pocket to make it out there on my own. The kids today don't seem to have that fear, but I did. So I moved to St. Louis and found a job and a place to live, and I think almost immediately the bar across the street. Of course, growing up with no alcohol around at all, I knew nothing about it, but I was curious, as kids are. I wanted to know what this terrible devil's brew was that they told me I couldn't have. And so I went in and proceeded to try, as we all do at some point, and discovered a magic for me. Suddenly, I was as good as everybody else. I could talk to people. I could be whatever I wanted to be. And give me a few more, and I'm better than all you guys. You know, that's what it did for me. So I latched on to it. I mean, it was natural that when I find a magic like that, I'm not going to let go of it. Of course, my drinking didn't start drinking 24 hours at a time. You know, it began on weekends and a party. That summer, two things happened that stand out in my mind. One was, well, I left home 3 weeks before my 18th birthday, and I spent my 18th birthday in a St. Louis City drunk tank. And I have no idea how I got there, even today. So I learned about blackouts. And this didn't seem particularly important to me at this time because I just thought that was part of drinking. You know, if you drink, you black out, and that's the way it is. I thought it was kind of interesting. especially some of the places you wake up and don't know what happened. You know, it's ripe age 18. You don't worry about these things too much, Sharon. At least we didn't then. There was another thing that happened, and I, too, was fortunate enough to attend the International Convention in Seattle this year. Well, about 3 years after I sobered up, I was reading AA Comes of Age, and it was talking about the 20th anniversary convention they'd had in St. Louis, and I realized I was there. I'd gone down to this arena where they have a lot of different things going on, and I had gotten some tickets for a upcoming event, and there was a sign splashed all over talking about Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and people were milling around and they were drinking coffee and smoking cigarettes, but the one thing I noticed was they were all happy. I never saw so many smiling people in my life, and it was a mob. You know, generally mobs are pushing and shoving and angry and very irate, and it wasn't there. And that impressed me, you know. I had no idea how I knew it, but I knew these were people who had had a problem with drinking, and they had somehow learned how to live without it. And I don't know how I knew that, but I knew that at that time. It was 23 years later before I remembered that incident. I totally blocked that out. So all through my drinking, I said I didn't know there was such a thing as AA, you know. Of course, at that time, I had no idea I belonged there, and this was 3 weeks after I spent the night in St. Louis City drunk tank. So yeah, I felt like qualified. But it took me 20 years longer to get here. I said in Seattle, I'd like to say I've been sober for 35 years, but, you know, I can't do that. Still an honest program. Well, I found out that even though I discovered alcohol and I got away from this crummy existence that I grew up in, life still wasn't all that great. So there's got to be more to it. And this cute little dude from Idaho come along, and oh, he was a doll. He was all of 17, and I was barely 18, and we decided we should do life together. And so we proceeded to get married. And having always lived in this kind of crazy fantasy world I lived in, I thought I was Cinderella and I was going to ride off the castle and live happily ever after. It didn't quite happen that way. Not only did things go from bad to worse, and my drinking increased as we proceeded to have a couple of kids real fast, and he was in the service and spent a lot of time overseas. By the time we were married 9 months, he left, and I was glad. After 5 years, I realized to preserve my own sanity, I had to get out of that relationship because it was bad news, and he was later declared legally insane, so now I know why. I seem to have the ability to surround myself with real weird people. None of you guys, of course. And all through this, all I thought was, gee, if I was only single, life would be so great. Yeah. If I only get divorced and out of this relationship, everything is going to be fine. Oh, yeah. 6 months later, I discovered I sure didn't like living alone. 6 months later, I also discovered I do not drink like normal people do, because I went on a 6 month drunk. And that 6 months I was divorced, and I drank nothing but beer. So that sure cuts out that one, that you can't be an alcoholic on beer. And I realized that, hey, I'm an alcoholic. Well, okay, I'll just quit drinking. You know, that's all there is to it, no big deal. And so this guy came into the bar one night, and he looked at me and he said, I'm so-and-so and I'm perfect. And I said, well, in that case, you have to marry me. So he did. I think I met him on Friday and married him the next Wednesday. I never saw any point in waiting, you know. What's the point? We're going to do this eventually anyhow. Let's go ahead and get it on, you know. Well, he was a strange person, too. We had a bunch more kids. I ended up with 6 by the time I got rid of him 2 years later. And he mainly was strange because I guess he's what you call one of these social drinkers, you know. He'd say, I'm going to get really drunk tonight and maybe finish half a can of beer. And my alcoholism was increasing, and it was getting worse, and this is tough. This is really hard to want to drink when it's not in the house and you're not allowed to go anywhere unless you take a kid or two along. And so I'd have to run down to the grocery store and I'd have to grab a 6-pack of beer, I'd have to go home and I'd have to drink one, and then I'd have to go to the grocery store where I generally went to the bar so he wouldn't smell me when I came home, you know. Well, this gets real complicated, and I finally realized I had to get out of this situation because it wasn't good for my drinking, you know. Aside from that, it was getting me a little bit nuts, and I ended up in a nut house. Well, while I was in there, he got custody of all my kids and divorced me, so I didn't have to bother going through the process. I had also said, you know, I felt so trapped, and I had all these kids, and that's why I have to drink. Well, after that, I had 7 more years of drinking because I missed my kids so bad. Children can be great excuses, I'll tell you, you know. Well, after this, I proceeded to run off with another guy. I went back to the same bar I met the second one in and found another one. The gal who worked there said, hey, go with this guy. You're always going with these real creepy ones, and he's a good one, you know. So I said, okay, you know. I went home with him to check it out, and I didn't have any place to live. You know, you got to do something. And I didn't believe in working. That was, you know, that was for men. I didn't have to do that. By the way, that's why God put you guys in the world, you know, to take care of me. That's what I figured at that point, you know. Women I had no use for because they didn't do nothing for me, you know. Well, my third husband, I didn't realize the fact that he had a drinking problem, too, until long after I was sober, because he didn't drink like I did. I drank every day if I had the opportunity, and I didn't care if it was morning, noon, or night. I wasn't these wait till after 5 thing, you know, that's for the birds. But he would only, about once every 3 or 4 months, he'd go on a good one, you know, and then he'd get violent and beat me up, and we'd have all kinds of fun. And it got to the point where we were trading shots at each other, and I'm not talking about this kind of shot, I'm talking about these, you know, and I got a little bit scared of that one. So I ran away with his best friend. who, by the way, had a much worse drinking problem than I did. See, I learned my second husband, for God's sake, don't marry a flatlander, you know. So my third, fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh were all alcoholics. I learned about these things. See, I learned some things while I was going through this. I also learned not to have any more kids. You know, this was bad news, so I didn't do any more of that, fortunately for them. I married his best friend, who only stayed with 9 months because I couldn't work, and he'd sat on a bar stool so long that he didn't have any income, and I had to pay the rent. And I couldn't work and keep up drinking with him. So I had to run away to Portland with a trucker that came through one day. It's just, you know, I really never had any kind of control of my life. I never tried to. Whatever was in front of me, I just, you know, they said, go with the flow, and I went. Well, somewhere or another, after living all around the country in the back of a pickup for a year, we ended up in Baker, Montana. Now, really, we ended up first in Trout Creek. He always wanted to go back to Trout Creek, and I'd never spent any time at all in Montana, so I'd never been in jail in Montana except once, so this was good. It was a good state to go to, you know. I shudder when I go through Great Falls, but it's okay. So we went to Trout Creek, and there was nothing to do there, so we ended up in Thompson Falls, and they got some good bars there. I drank a lot around there. And then we ended up going across the country and going all over the Midwest and living in the back of a pickup and tearing down houses. And it was really weird. And I think he drank a little too much, too. But anyhow, we ended up back in Montana after this year, and I thought I was ready to put down roots and settle down. So we moved into a campground in Kalispell. They let me clean the bathrooms to keep me in daily beer. It was a good deal. It was okay. He got his truck stolen, and so we had to move on. I think he got drunk one night and somebody stole his truck or something. I don't know. But anyhow, we ended up... That's when we went to Baker. And now, this was excitement. If anybody's here from Baker, you know what I mean. You know, Baker's got to be it. Now, Baker's not a bad little town, but I didn't see any of it. I ended up managing a motel and running a laundromat there, which means you're on the job from 6 in the morning till midnight, so I didn't see the town people. But boy, did I meet the salesman from Billing. And they'd call me up and say, where's the action in this town? I'd say, in the motel office. Bring a bottle. At the same time, the boss was married to an alcoholic, so he kept his booze in the motel so she wouldn't drink it. Wasn't too long before he discovered he had two of us on his hands. Anyhow, one of the salesmen came through, and we kind of got to be pretty good buddies, and he invited me to go spend a weekend in Billings with him. And I finally did, and I'll tell you, it was instant. True love at first sight. This was it. I mean, forever. Because I walked in his place, and he had a bar that was better stocked than any bar I ever been in. And I could have all I wanted, anytime. Yeah. I started finagling how I was going to get out of Baker and into Billings real quick. You know, it took me about 3 months. And I moved in with him, and I started drinking. And that was the beginning of the end. Because a year and a half of drinking the way I want to drink was as far as I could go without dying. So I ended up back in AA. And I can't say as how I did it the way I was told to do it, because I didn't like the looks of any of it, and I was smart. I didn't have to do this stuff, you know. I was far above all the rest of you guys. You poor son. And besides that, your stories were bad. You needed it, you know. I didn't. I was okay. I couldn't even see as how my life was unmanageable, because I'd spent a lot of time in a lot of strange places. And when you're down on Skid Row in Seattle or Portland or San Francisco or wherever, nobody's got custody of their kids there. Nobody's got jobs. Nobody's driving cars. So I thought I was just like everybody else. You know, my life is not unmanageable. All I need to do is not drink. I believe that. And I sure don't want nothing to do with this God they talk about, because I had that God in my childhood, and I don't want to go back to that. In fact, when they first started talking about God in the very beginning, if I hadn't been handcuffed that radio, I'd have been long gone. Yeah. That really threw me. I couldn't handle that. And finally I heard him say higher power. Well, maybe I could live with that, you know. Or God as you understand him, that I could really latch on to. And they weren't going to tell me what I had to believe, only that I did have to believe in something. So this morning I was talking about, I got up and said that prayer. It was several months later before I realized that this God was doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. And then I began to believe maybe there was a side of this God I didn't know anything about. Maybe God did love me after all. I remember as a very young child singing Jesus Loves Me in Sunday school. But then when you got to be 8 or 9, suddenly, you know, it was different. And you had to become perfect. And I wasn't perfect. And the depth I had gone to, I was still staying sober in spite of myself. And it wasn't me that was doing it. God knows. I never did it in that 20 years I practiced. So it sure wasn't me that was keeping me sober. I sat around AA on those first 3 steps for about 3 years or so. And I got pretty miserable, as you do. You know, they tell you there's 12 steps, work them all in order. Well, I thought the first 3 were pretty good, you know. I was staying dry. I was happy. That's all that matters. I thought I was happy. It was better than drinking, I'll say that. I wasn't waking up in jail, and I wasn't waking up in nut houses, and I wasn't waking up in strange men's places, you know. I knew where I was and what I'd done. That made a difference. Finally, I got miserable enough, I decided maybe I should try that 4-step they keep talking about, but boy, I didn't want to, because everything I knew about me was bad. And I sure didn't want to look any farther and find out more bad stuff. But I finally realized I had to, because it just wasn't working the way I was going, so I did. And I spent months working on this thing. I'd keep a notebook there on the kitchen table, and I would, when I thought of something, make a little note of it, and when I'd get home, I'd write it down, and I'd write it all out, you know, and I had a stack about this thick. Finally, one day I thought, well, I think I'm about done with this thing. I have to do my 5th step, and I still didn't have anything to do with religion, so I don't know any ministers. I wasn't seeing a counselor, so I didn't have a counselor I could go to. I didn't know who I could do this thing with, so I began looking around AA meetings and realized I had to find somebody to tell this to, and thought, well, I just will choose a sponsor, you know. I'm only 3 years sober. I did everything the easy way. I even sobered up in 1975, which means it was 366 days before I got my first birthday. I didn't realize that until a long time later. Then I asked this guy if he'd be my sponsor because I needed to tell my 5th step to somebody, and he said sure. So we did. And I carefully chose who I picked. I picked somebody who I knew was worse than I was. You know, this guy was a real dirty, rotten rat, let's face it. And I didn't figure he was going to put me down for anything I had done, and he didn't, because everything I said, he could tell me two worse, and he did it well. Well, then it got really strange, because I thought, well, you know, that was the only reason I wanted a sponsor for it. Get rid of that junk, you know, that was it. And then he'd start calling me up, well, why aren't you going to this meeting, or why aren't you doing that? And I'd get off my case, I didn't want you for that. He finally got drunk. Seemed he had some problems, but it worked for me, you know. He told people that he got drunk because he heard my 5th step, and, you know. Of course, I think it was a year later, so it must have really weighed on his mind or something. Things still continued to get worse in spite of the fact I had done these things, you know, and I had begun making the amends, and I had begun trying to tell other people what I had done that had not been right, and people that I had hurt. There were a lot of things I found I could not make amends to. I had shot and killed a guy because he called me a stupid bitch out in the bar. Now, bitch I could live with, you know, but stupid, I didn't mind. You know, and these kind of things, how do you make amends for a situation like that? You know, I got off with a hearing, he was a drifter, he wasn't anybody important anymore than I was, so they just ignored the whole thing. But I was responsible for the death of one of my children, and how do you make amends for this? You know, but I finally realized all it says is be willing. The hardest one was to my mother, because it took 7 years for her to accept my amends. We still are not on a good basis, but it's better. You know, she's still very sick. Thank you. My ego needed that. When I was 3.5 years sober, I got suicidal for the first time in my life. Because when I was drinking, I always lived this life, well, today's the pits, tomorrow's got to be better. Never was, but I believe that, you know. And suddenly I hit an emotional bottom that I had never hit before, which I would never have hit had I continued to drink. So I had to be stopped before I could get clear to that point. And I thank God that it worked in that way. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here tonight. But it just seemed like I was hopeless. I was never going to get better. Things were never going to be okay, so I just, well, do it. You know, and nobody cared anyhow. I was still on this, nobody cares for me. Well, to me, the only way to kill yourself is take a bunch of pills and go to sleep, because I've seen suicides, and most of them are messy. You know, and I'm not going to leave a mess like this for somebody, and it might hurt. So I don't have anything in the house to take, so I got to wait till tomorrow to go get some pills so I can, you know, do this thing. Well, while I was doing this, I went to an AA meeting and told them exactly how I was feeling, fortunately. And as soon as the meeting was over, I had 20 people over in my corner saying, "Hey, you've helped us. Please don't. We like you here." And it was hard. It was a hard time to work through. I spent a long time working on that. I realized it was a very final decision, and I'd better be darn certain that's what I wanted to do. And it was several months later before I finally came out of that. About the same time that a lot of strange things happened to me. About 4 years of sobriety, I found myself in a situation that I thought was terribly humiliating, and that was on my knees. I finally hit the place where I had to get there, you know. And I thought that was just going just to the utter depths. It had to be, you know, when you'll go this far. I didn't have any ego, no. And I was driven to the point where it was take it all. I can't handle anything. About the same time, a past delegate who was sitting here in the room tonight came up to me and said, "Would you serve as the area secretary treasurer?" Well, the first thing I said was, "Well, what the heck do they do and who are they?" You know, I'd sat back in my own little group in my own little corner and done nothing but make coffee for 4 years. I didn't know anything about service. And he said, "Well, I suggest you get a service manual." I said, "Well, what's a service manual?" So he found me one, and I proceeded to read in there what this area secretary treasurer does. And it says that they're elected, and I said, "Okay, fine." So I went out a week or so later and said, "Well, I've decided to turn this one over to God and see if, you know, if it really works," because I didn't turn much over to God at that point except my alcoholism. And I said, "If I'm supposed to get elected, I will, and if not, I won't. When's the election?" And he said, "No election, you're it." I found out in Montana they appoint them, and there for a few minutes I was wondering who my higher power was, you know. He was big, that's all I knew. But that was what finally was the turning point for me. And I discovered I did have an ego. I was going to be important. I was going to be in front of the room. I was going to have all those people looking at me, and I better know something. So I started working the steps. I studied the traditions. I did absolutely everything I'd been told to do for 4 years, for all the wrong reasons. And once again, I'm not graded on my motivation, thank God. But it worked. You know, it did work. Everything I've done in AA is because I've been desperate or for the wrong reasons. But that's okay. It did. Life started changing around, you know. And it was all because of this involvement in service, and I was somebody important. Well, a couple of years later, I'd gotten in a relationship that was very painful, and so the old memories of how you deal with this stuff came back, and I ran off with the first guy who was ready and willing. And we won't talk about him too much. As Rich says, he's a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I found out that I couldn't stay in that situation because it was a sick relationship, and I got sicker and sicker, and I really went down the tube. Mainly because of the fact I had lived 3 years single. Oh, I forgot to mention one of my husbands, for God's sake. You know, they told me when I came to AA, they said, don't do anything permanent for the first year. Well, I was sober a month and I got married again, you know. I proved they don't know what they're talking about. Only thing was, I married my last drinking buddy and he continued to drink and I didn't, and it got to be bad news, so 3 years later I finally left to preserve my sobriety. Well, I lived alone for 3 years, which is something I had never done. And I didn't know if I could or not. I was 40 years old. God, it's hard to go through menopause and puberty at the same time. And I sit there and say, you know, I can't face the fact of living alone the rest of my life, but for today it's okay. And for today, I will work and become the person I can be. So then when Mr. Wright comes along, I can ride off into the sunset and live happily ever after. And that's what I did. I lived on that basis. Well, then when this guy came along who, you know, was ready and willing, of course I dashed off with him, you know. And I don't know, I was around him for a month or so before I married him. No, it turned out not to be my white knight. It was more of a court jester and tinfoil, I guarantee it. But I came out of that relationship very sick. I was back to where I was in my first year of sobriety. I was a real basket case. And I went and hid from the world for a year while I got me back together with no contact outside except for AA meetings. That was the only thing I did. And it took me that long to get so I was ready to come back out into the world and face things and come back to being a light person. After that, I met a guy. Surprise! I think this is up to 7 now. I met a guy I had been sitting across the table from for a year, very quiet guy who was very serious, and one thing I can't handle is too much seriosity. If you don't have a sense of humor, I don't want to hang around you forever, you know. And he always sat in these meetings just kind of, you know, like, this is serious business, and I thought, you know, I totally overlooked him. Of course, I didn't realize he didn't have a wife either, because most of the good guys in AA are well taken. It's been a tough struggle, and I don't trust those flatlanders. You know, God knows what they'll do, so I didn't date them. I went out with one once. I was home by 9 o'clock because he thought if he got me drunk, he could do something, and, you know, I wouldn't drink, so he took me home. Yeah. That's the way that works, so I gave them guys up. But finally, I started going to some out-of-town meetings with this guy and my sponsor, and I found out you get him out of the car, and he's Looney Tunes. I mean, this guy's Nutty the Fruitcake, you know. Comes up with all kinds of weird stuff, and I immediately was fascinated because here's a guy that's got a sense of humor. He's a lot of fun to be around, and he's been sober for, I don't know, 6-7 years, you know. And got a real good program. I can see it working in his life. He's never been married. That made me nervous. 43 years old, still living home with Mama. Oh, God. But I decided to take a chance, so, you know, within a week after I met him, I was ready. I started dating him on Christmas, and by New Year's, I started wrapping the little bow on it, you know, let's wrap it up. And he said, no. And this was something new, an alcoholic I couldn't handle, you know. He said, no. He said, I find out people don't get divorced if they wait a while and get to know each other. Oh. You know, he made me wait for over a year. It was terrible, and I just knew he was going to get away, and you know, it was going to be awful, and he was. He was a good guy. He still is. He's a very nice guy. We've been married now for over 4 years, which is getting damn close to a record, you know. And that's not the half of it. I don't want to leave, you know. In fact, I told if he ever left me, I was going along. That's the way it worked. Oh, and at the time I started going with him, I realized that I had not always done everything in AA that they told me to. Yes, I had worked all the steps and to the best of my ability. And I was living this life the best I could, but I still had a tendency that when the going got rough, boy, I'll get in there and I'll really pray a lot and I'll work hard, but when things level off, well, I'll back off, you know, and I'll slack off. And I had these ungodly mood swings the first 10 years I was sober. And I thought, you know, here I've got a new relationship, and this one looks like it's going to be darn good. It's just like me to back off, and, you know, and then everything will go to hell, and I'll lose him, and everything will fall apart. So once again, for the wrong reasons, I started working the AA program on a daily basis after 10 years. And, you know, the mood swings went away. I learned to live in today because I sat in AA meetings with a gal who talked about today is the only day I can grow. And that appealed to me because ever since I wanted to act emotionally mature in all situations. God knows I've fallen short most of the time. But this is the way I grow, you know. I do want to at least act as an adult. I mean, that doesn't mean I'd be a stuffy old fuddy-duddy, you know. We have fun. But I don't want to act like the child any longer. And so this idea of growing, today is the only day I have to grow, that appealed to me, and I started doing that, and I learned to live today. Because I was still into this tomorrow is going to be the big bang. Yesterday wasn't bothering me anymore, but tomorrow, boy, tomorrow's really going to be it. I didn't know what it was going to be, but it's going to be the big day, you know. And I was missing what I was seeing on a daily basis. I was missing the good life. So since then, things have been an awful lot different. I stayed in service. I have served at every level you can serve at and done several of them. And that's been, I guess I've been in service now for 11 years, and I'm winding it down. Last fall, I was elected as your delegate, which is a very important responsibility to me. I take it extremely important. This simply means not that I'm a better drunk than you, not that I got it more together than you, but simply because I've probably been involved longer than you. You know, I waited longer. It means that I go every year, last year and this spring and next spring, to the General Service Conference in New York, which is the group conscience for all of the United States and Canada, where the majority of the decisions about Alcoholics Anonymous are made. What literature you're going to see, what kind of public information is going to be put out. These type of decisions are made. And it is an awesome responsibility when I look at the fact that I represent over 4,100 people in the state of Montana. And I've got to do my best for each and every one of them. It's rather mind that this can happen to one individual. But one thing I found when I was there, that some of my fears about what have been happening to Alcoholics Anonymous is becoming a very widespread concern. The people all over the country and in Canada, too, are very concerned about what the way Alcoholics Anonymous has been going in the last few years. Sometimes I think that we've gotten so open-minded our brains have fallen out. I find a tremendous amount of uninformed and misinformed people in Alcoholics Anonymous, and most of the things I say are quotes from somebody else. I steal everything because I seldom have an original idea. I don't quite know how to say it. It's a difficult thing to say because, you know, we've let people come in and they talk about absolutely everything else except Alcoholics Anonymous, except alcoholism. You know, we're hearing all kinds of topics that have no place there. We hear nothing about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. They're quoting treatment center stuff. It's the only way I can say it. And the only thing I can say is, you know, there is a big difference between treatment and AA. Treatment is great. And don't get me wrong, I don't have anything against it, because I know a lot of people in AA who are alive today that would not be had they not gone to treatment. So I'm a firm believer in treatment. But there is a big difference between what you do in there in a secluded, protected environment for 28, 30 days and what you do out here in the big old world. This is reality. This is where people get married and where they die and where they get divorced and they're born. This is where we lose jobs and take out bankruptcy. This is where we get sick. This is where all the bad things that can happen to us. Not in there, out here. And so you better start getting a little bit more than what you got in the treatment center. You know, we've had these people come in and they're talking about all their codependencies and whatever that means. And all these things, you know. And this is where I said our brains have fallen out, because those of us who've been around a while know better. But we sit back and we say, well, they'll change after being here a while. We haven't told them they should. We haven't told them there's a difference. This is the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. We haven't done this. We're somewhat people pleasers in AA, you know. We don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, God forbid. And somebody will come in and say, I'm a drug addict. And we go, oh, that's wonderful, you know. I don't have any drug addict either, you know. But Alcoholics Anonymous is not for drug addicts. And Alcoholics Anonymous... it's not for adult children of alcoholics or spouses of alcoholics. It's not for the anorexics, the bulimics, or the overeaters, or the people with sex problems. It's not for any of these things. Gamblers. I look around the room, I see people with additional problems, you know, and this is fine. But this is not where you go to take care of these problems. I don't go to AA and say, hey, I'm addicted to the marriage ceremony. You know. But I found out by going to AA and dealing with my alcoholism and working the 12 steps, I'm not addicted to that Mary Sellman anymore. You know, and this is the way it happens with most of our problems. If we work the steps, they'll all work out. If you you hear a lot of people coming in, and I love the skit when Ann introduced herself as this and that and a. You know, we hear all this stuff. Don't bother. You know, you're wasting your time coming and telling us all these things. We really don't care. You know, we can't help you with that stuff. The only thing we can really do is help you with your problem with alcohol. If you've got other problems and you need other help, there are places for these things. Go there, you know, with these things. If you're drunk, we love you. Please, all of you, come to us, you know. I knew a guy in Billings who, his wife told him he should go to AA because he had a drinking problem. So he went down to the local club and had a cup of coffee and sat around a while and went back home, and his wife said, "Well, where you been?" He said, "Well, I went to AA." Well, he got drunk that night, so she figured it didn't work, you know. But this is a very drastic case, you know, about what people think AA is. But, you know, it's only an example that, hey, you know, AA is not any of those other things that a lot of people think it is. AA is not where you go to get in touch with yourself. AA is not where you go to find yourself, if you're lost. AA is where you go to find God and get in touch with God. That's all. I have this reoccurring nightmare that I'm chairing an AA meeting and I say, "Tonight we're going to talk about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous," and the first 9 people pass. Because they AA meetings. AA is the 12 steps. And if you want to get better, you better work them. I proved to myself that if I want to get out of trouble, I can go to AA once in a while. Work a step once in a while, a little. And I can stay dry for a while before I get so miserable I'm either going to kill myself or go back to drinking. And then I tried it by going to a lot of AA meetings, getting involved in AA, making coffee, working with people. And I find out life can be just absolutely wonderful. Then I got involved in service, and now I get to travel all over the country and get delirious. You know, it's, if you find something missing in your life, there's an answer for it in AA. Believe me, we'll give you a job if you want something to do. If you're bored, we'll liven it up. I have to take the steps as I take medicine for a disease. This is the way it works for me. I have to go to meetings. I have to wallow in these steps. I have to wallow in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have to surround myself with them until they become a very vital part of my life. I've seen signs saying AA is a way of life, and this is just exactly what it is. I also learned to work the AA program, not mine. My program don't work with a damn. The AA one works well. First time I read the Big Book, after I was 3 years sober, the only thing I could find in it that related to me was in the story in the back of the book that the Kalispell Roundup is going to use next spring, Out of Freedom from Bondage. And I want to read it. It says that I had always been a cinch for the program because I'd always been interested in mankind, but that I was just taking them one man at a time. You know, there's an awful lot that fits me. It fits each and every one of us. I've spent a couple of years studying this book. I mean studying it. And I still go back and read it and find new things I never knew that were there. It changes. Everything changes. And it's so great. But if by my comments on who belongs here and who doesn't belong here, if somebody's got a resentment, I'd suggest you call your sponsor. Because I'm not sorry for the things I say, because I think it's important. I didn't realize when I was having those 6 kids what I was starting, you know, except for getting drunk and having 6 kids. But I now have 6 children and 12 grandchildren, and some of them are great, heavy into alcoholism. I want AA to be there when those grandchildren come along and say, hey, I need some help. And the way it's going, I'm afraid it won't be. We've got to get back to Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 steps. I'm sure I've used up my allotted time and probably some more too. But there is one more item I want to mention before I close. When I went to the General Service Conference this spring, I was sitting at a meal with a delegate from Utah, and I noticed she was from a town that I have a drunken daughter living in. And I said, hey, Patty, would you go back home and sober up my daughter? Of course, she said no, you know. And I thought, yeah, how unfortunate it doesn't happen that easily, you know. But about 2 weeks after I got home, I got a phone call, and this sad little boy said, Mom, I'm in trouble. I'm an alcoholic. No. Yeah, she said, I got to do it. And, you know, it was so nice. I said, just sit there by your phone. I know a girl. I'll call her. She'll get in touch with you. Rather than saying, hey, you know, look it up in the phone book. I hope you find it there because it's a long ways from my house to Ogden, Utah. I can't go to it. So I called Patty and I said, Patty, now you can go talk to my daughter. And she said, right. And she did. And the last time I talked to my daughter, she's got 4 months of sobriety now. So see, all the things I have done in Alcoholics Anonymous have benefited me. May not have helped you at all, but it's sure been good for me. Awfully glad to be here tonight. Looking forward to the rest of the weekend. I'm sure it's going to be a great roundup. Thank you.